What the fuck, Michael? What the fuck?
I love this. This is amazing.
Go sit somewhere else where you could push a goddamn button and be useful. Like, yeah. Don't just sit there like, yep, I'm the captain. This is my ship.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 14-42-64.1. Welcome aboard the Starship Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. Your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, she forgot how painful this was until she was forced by a time spider to relive it, Ambassador Danae. And you have to relive it every Friday.
Yeah.
For like four hours every Friday. Mm-hmm. And then I have to edit it for 4 hours every Monday.
But you know what's amazing is that usually the editor estimates that for every hour of audio, it's 2 hours of editing.
Mm, yes.
So on the positive side, you're a very good editor.
Very efficient. No. I mean, an hour of that is watching the show. So it's actually 3 hours of content. And then a lot of that is just dead air between us.
Nobody that listens exclusively to the podcast and has been thinking about going to the live show will go to the live show now.
No, it's not gonna happen. It's a lot of dead air. It's 6 hours, 5 hours and 45 minutes of which is very awkward dead air.
So how are you feeling about Discovery so far? I want to jump right into it because we were a little hesitant to just dive into the final season because I'm lacking a lot of context.
Yep.
But a Discovery are you noob. Enjoying it?
I am, for the most part, actually. I really, really am.
Like, is this becoming a Picard thing? Because that was really hard. Not enjoying Picard was really hard. Because I wanted to enjoy it so much.
Season 2 hurt. And then the middle of season 3 hurt. I'm having a really good time on the whole. I still have exactly the same frustrations with Discovery. And that's around, like, lovey-dovey relationship pacing. But overall, visually, this show is beautiful. The performances are incredible. Last week sold me as just an incredible bottle episode of time traveliness that was really, really fun. So overall, I'm having exactly the time I expected I would with Discovery.
Well, that's good. I'm enjoying it. It's not something that like I'm thinking about a lot in between episodes.
Yeah.
And I would hope that though somebody who's a really big Discovery fan, that they're having a good time and feeling like this series is giving its all at the very end. It just, there's so much pressure I would feel to kind of deliver on that final season.
I'm glad you've mentioned that because I'm 99% certain this is right. They didn't know this was going to be the final season while they were making it.
Oh.
That announcement was made after they'd wrapped filming and then they did some reshoots for the final episode to give it a tie it in a bow, button up ending.
No.
Which changes your perspective.
Now I'm worried a bit.
Yaha. That changes this perspective a lot.
Oof. Now, having watched some content that had to be redone due to certain circumstances, I've had some strange experiences where I can kind of feel like it's pieced together instead of it being like a cohesive thought. And I'm trying to remember the name of the series. Let me try to access my.
Mm-hmm.
It was the Marvel series that was released.
Winter Soldier.
Yeah, it was that one with Captain America
and the Falcon.
Yeah, the Winter Soldier, Winter Falcon, maybe.
Yeah,
something like that. Anyhow, that one, the storyline contained a pandemic. Then there's actual pandemic.
And so and then they shifted
it. They pulled
it
down. They reshot some stuff. They kept what they could. They pieced it back together. And
so unlucky.
I remember watching that, not knowing that that had happened. So I was feeling that weirdness. Now here, I think I'm feeling like, oh, they're doing this on purpose. So it's really strange to now know that they're not.
To be fair, it's not that they did reshoots for the entire season. It's the last episode. I think they added some elements to give it some finality. But yeah, it still changes. Like, there isn't like an overall goal in this season to wrap stuff up. This is just an adventure for this season. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I would have thought that episode one was purposefully directive, and episode two, and then you've got this Cebu thing going on, or Seru thing going on, and he is leaving. And so I thought that was an intentional thing. So now I'm.
Well, it's interesting that it feels that way, doesn't
it?
Anyway, maybe they had an inkling. Maybe there was like rumblings, and so they hedged their bets a bit. Because season five is about all you're going to get nowadays.
It's maybe like, I don't mean to be offensive to anybody, but it's maybe like an astronomy situation where you make it what you want to make it.
Yes, no, be offensive.
You know
that's
I mean?
Exactly how that works. But That's not offensive. That is truth.
I don't know. I've read my star chart and I was really impressed.
Yeah, I read the wrong one and it was just as applicable. Let's go into the... Over to the observation.
That's because you're a Virgo that you said that.
Uh-huh. Let's go.
It's because you're a Capricorn.
Something rising in Uranus. Let's go over to the observation lounge for some predictions. Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. I had a really helpful kind of correction slash prediction that I wanted to hit off first from Philip via email. So thank you very much, Philip. Now, last week we talked about my prediction, which was that this week had to be the mirror universe. And we also talked about time travel and where the temporal police are, the temporal prime directive guys that are enforcing stuff that we saw in Voyager, and why time travel isn't being policed anymore. Phil helpfully reminded me, and I love this from you guys, there is too much Star Trek, I need these reminders, that during season 3 of Discovery, we were told that after the temporal wars, there was a temporal accord put into place, which basically everyone signed and agreed and said, we won't be using time travel. And they actually have mechanical things in place to prevent people from being able to travel through time, to get medley, and to do the things that they're going to do. So that explains why the temporal police aren't around anymore. The relativity isn't around doing its thing because time travel somehow is very, 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 very prohibited and strictly policed. Tied into that, we also found out last season that the mirror universe has, at this point in the 3100s, has drifted so far from our timeline that you can't travel to it anymore. And anything that exists here.
Why is it
stable.
On a sheet of ice? I don't get it.
Because there's more variation. So they start off at the same point, and then as time goes on, they vary more and more and more. And whereas they started off looking a little bit similar, they now look incredibly different, and they're so far removed that nothing can survive from the mirror universe in this universe or from this universe in the mirror universe. So if we do mirror universe shenanigans this time around in this episode,
everybody's
it would
dying.
Be hugely sinful. Now, it, like beyond that, they've already said it's basically impossible. So they're really there's going to be all kinds of questions if this ends up being a mirror universe.
Okay, episode. So does that change your prediction then?
No. I'm still predicting mirror universe shenanigans. Like, there, even if they don't travel to the mirror universe, this will have a connection to the mirror universe somehow. My brain cannot allow that to not be a thing, given the episode title being the way that it is.
Well, thank God for our audience bringing us up to speed.
Oh, always. Thank you, Philip, for that the brief like kind of summary there of the things that I'd missed. Much appreciated. We have a prediction from Paulie, who says, I have a horrible prediction. Book Burnham and Rayner will become a love triangle. I think that sounds great. I think...
Burnham and Rayner. Mm-hmm. Oh, Rayner. Oh, Rayner, yes.
The grumpy yes. Commander Discount Shaw.
A love triangle?
Yeah. He said it's a horrible prediction. I think it's a great one. I mean, that'll be amazing. That's probably the only way you can get me interested, is by making it more complicated.
Everything is changing now that you told me that they didn't know that it was the end when they wrote
it. You can't
these.
Get that out of your brain. I don't blame you.
It's changed everything.
Uh-huh.
It's like finding out where your food comes from.
What bit of the cow you're eating.
So, like, I'm just running everything. All of my assumptions of how this show is made is now, like, everything is different now. I don't know how to think about the show because, I want to believe that there would be a purpose for everything. Like, if they decided to do a threesome,
right?
Like,
yes,
for,
okay,
for
yeah.
a reason, you know. And now it's just like it was just an accidental writing choice.
Yep, I almost wish I hadn't told you. I'm glad I did though.
It's hard to know what to tell me.
I think
what
you
not
would have felt
me.
Really betrayed if I told you at episode 10, and you're like, "What the fuck?"
No, I'm glad you told me because it is important to keep those things in mind.
Yeah.
Because I used that so strongly as one of the reasons that I was kind of...
Yeah, that's why I made a note of it. Because I realized that in the last week, we talked about it a couple of times. I was like, I really need to bring this up.
Yeah.
Another prediction from Wandering Winder. There will be a character drama between Book and Burnham. No surprise there. That's definitely going to happen. But specifically regarding the parallel nature of their quasi foster siblings. So the fact that Moll is foster sister to Book, and Burnham also has a foster brother in Spock. So that's an interesting thing I hadn't thought of. They actually share that in common as a connecting point. And it would be criminal if they don't touch on that and talk about it, because that's a way for Burnham to really relate to what Book will be going through, that kind of loyalty to her sibling.
Maybe that's the mirror part of this episode.
Perhaps. One final preemptive sin from Sci-Fi Brony. Ian will fail to update Danae with necessary background info. Yeah, you can almost guarantee that's going to happen this week. No surprises there.
But it makes for such fun.
It does. I love backpedaling in the middle of the episode. And by the way, I should have told you this. Your prediction from last week's episode was that Raina's hand injury will become terminal.
Yes.
Spock will turn up based on my mirror universe prediction. And he will have the next clue. So we'll get to see Ethan Peck. Anything you'd want to add to that after having a week to percolate?
No, I think at this point, I'm ready to jump in and see what the writers intended to do without knowing that it was the end.
Oh no, I've ruined you. It's amazing. With that, let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode. We'll see you in 10 forward for a full debrief of Discovery Season 5, Episode 5, Mirrors.
Mirrors.
Welcome to 10 Forward, the part of the show where we grab something from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question first, what would you like from the programmable matter dispenser?
I like how you had to roll the G to really get that out.
Programmable. Matter dispenser.
I mean, hypo spray is needed today.
A hypo spray for what?
For his wound.
Oh, no, you don't. Okay.
You hypo spray that shit. No. That works on everything.
No, you hypo spray the person to kill the pain or like bring them back to life. Oh. You want a dermal regenerator on the wound.
Seal it. Fuck. Okay. All right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, that's what I'm going to get today. Why? Because for some reason, we all want Moll and Locke to live now.
Mm-hmm. We're invested now because we have backstory about them. I would like a boiled Kelleran cake.
Was that mentioned? Did I miss that?
What? he said something about like, I don't need to know how the cake is boiled when he's talking to Stamets about the explanation. And then Adira is like, Kellerans boil their cakes? And he's like, don't knock it till you've tried it. So yeah, boiled Kelleran cake. Give us a synopsis.
In today's episode, we go through a wormhole, I think.
Yeah, into, they called it a wormhole.
Technically, the Mirrorverse, but not, no. We go into a wormhole that may be connected to the Mirrorverse one time, and because it was connected, there was a ship stuck in there, kind of like a blood clot in a vein.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we are. Did you want to know about how Moll and Locke are in love? Did you want to know about Booker and Captain? Did you want to know about how they all talk to each other a whole fucking lot? This is the episode for you. Do you want action? I hope it's a lot of running and talking action. And also, bunghole in space.
Bunghole. Yeah.
Ta-da!
That's basically it. Yeah, they're in an interdimensional area of space that lies between universes, and they stumble across the ISS. Enterprise, where the next piece of the clue has deliberately been left. Feelings happen and they have to escape. How did you feel about this episode, Ambassador?
Boring!
Overall thoughts and feelings. I know! How can it be this boring? How can an episode that on paper has so much cool stuff in it be so fucking boring? We find out who the Breen are after like 35 years of knowing them. We see what happens to the ISS Enterprise after 57 years of not seeing it. And yet I was bored shitless. Sorry. Thoughts and feelings.
I think what I've been trying to kind of like put my words together. And I think what it is that I now firmly know that the show wants to save Moll and Locke, or it wants us to feel some kind of way about these characters. And it firmly put them in front of me. And it's like if we were standing actually face to face and Maul and Locke are being just put in front of my face, I'm trying to look behind them at the crew that I care about, knowing yeah. more about.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of kept glancing over, and the next ones in line are another relationship duo I don't care about. So then I'm looking behind them for Rainer being captain of the ship, and we barely see any of that this episode. And mm-hmm. where it really started to hit me was about halfway through, when we're going back and forth scene to scene, and they didn't really go back to the Discovery very often. We went back there a few times, you know, as they're trying to solve problems, and maybe there aren't a lot of problems to solve here, but they really kept in the pocket of back and forth between Maul and Locke, and then Booker and Captain, and then flashback to yeah. the history of how Maul and Locke came together. And I don't think we needed to have any flashback, personally. And if we did, that could have been one scene. It could have been one
yeah,
scene that could have given
one.
Us everything that we needed. We went there so many times.
Yeah.
And they're asking us to fall in love with two characters. I mean, if you're going to give them this much screen time, you're asking us to care about them. I'll say that. When we just watch them murder someone, you know, it's like, just a reminder, they straight up like poisoned somebody mm-hmm. and murdered them. And now it's like that they're really going for the redemption arc. And I don't think we needed to have as much with them to believe that Michael and Booker would want to save them anyway. You know, like, we didn't need to know that they have a love for each other, or that they've had it hard, or whatever. We didn't know. I didn't need to know any of that stuff.
I just assumed that.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I think that's why it didn't work for me overall. What about you? Did it work overall for you?
No, it didn't. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I've mentioned it in previous episodes, but the pacing is so killed by feelings. And just feelings that we've had before, like conflicts that we've had before. Dads are shitty. He's not like his dad. He has information about Mole's dad that she doesn't have. It's all about daddy issues.
And that line where he's like, I understand that he was a shitty dad to you, but he was a great mentor for me. And I'm like, really? Wow. You think she's not gonna shoot you now?
like that's like the angle you want to take here? Okay. What's frustrating is that, of course, there's a way to do this more organically, but any pace and like tension and drama that you build up, you immediately slam the brakes on by getting into this super fucking deep conversation about like relational stuff. Whereas, I don't know, I feel like you deal with the problem in hand, and then in reality, this happens like back on the ship, or you have like some quick back and forths that do the job. I don't think you're getting this deep into the weeds when you're on this like united front to get out of this wormhole and to get out of trouble. It feels like so much is paused to do this character development and to do this backstory. It's rare that you actually get to say this, but there is too much character development happening in every single episode with every single conversation. I did like the first flashback, which gives us the big holy shit, he's Breen.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Watching your face when you saw that happen was pretty cool. Because you were like, oh, yes!
My mind was blown for a couple of reasons. And that the middle flashback, where he actually removes his helmet and says, this isn't my real face, but I'll show it to you anyway. And then the final bit of the flashback where the other guy takes his helmet off, and we get told about the shame that comes from using that solid face instead of the more fluid, liquidy, extra-dimensional space.
Yeah.
And like, so much as I, and that for me, that really worked, because I was like, I'm getting a really quick insight into why the Breen wear their masks, why it's a big deal to take them off. This huge kind of like payoff for 30 years of Star Trek background lore, where we just haven't known this thing about the Breen, and we've really wanted to know what's going on under the Breen helmet. I really like that. But yeah, they could be, those flashbacks could absolutely be tightened down. I get that they're together. I get that they're on the run together. I get that they're like what is the name of the people that drove the car off the thing? The two women, they're on the run. They're Americans. You're like, hey, we're like da-da and da-da. Did they rob a bank?
Bonnie and Clyde?
Bonnie and Clyde, that's it. We know that they're Bonnie and Clyde.
I think one was a guy, just to be clear.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a female duo? But that happened as well. Thelma and Louise! Thank you! That's it. Thank you to the chat. Bonnie and Clyde, Thelma and Louise, that situation, we know that. For me, if you're spending this much time on them, you're just telegraphing that one or both will die. Like, I know it's so heavy-handed. One of them is dying, and it's going to, like, push the other. I predict that Luck is going to die, and Moll is going to be heavily, heavily motivated to do something about that, and that's going to drive some of the story. But yeah, you're right. It's interesting that we're spending so much time on them when there's a lot of the crew that we want to be spending.
Having just learned, you know, that the writers weren't aware that this was the final season, and maybe this episode is one of those that, to me, would easily be on the cutting floor if I knew that this was the final season and I was writing for it. Because I would rather fill an episode with the characters that I've known than do this.
Yeah,
because
it kind of
just feels
yeah.
like, I mean, honestly, today's episode could be another 20 minutes long and I'd be fine with it because there's not much to talk about here. Like, we didn't make any true progress towards the goal of getting closer to this thing. I mean, like, we know now that there's the clues seem to be alluding to having an awareness of purpose and direction, but even that sort of fell a little bit short for me on this one because it was a, you know, we joked around about astronomy. It was very much at that moment where Michael's like, you know what? This clue could be telling us that we can't give up. And it's like, this clue could also be telling you to keep your fucking shit out of holes. Like,
the fact that they have to spell out while looking at the camera what each clue piece means, I was like, you clearly, you don't have a confidence that the metaphor is there,
it,
that
it
you have
Luck.
To spoon feed it to us. And that you did need to, because that's not the message that I got.
Me either. And this is probably the other part on a deeper level where this episode gets really difficult for me, probably for multiple reasons that I can't really blame the episode for. It's mostly my lack of context because this one says, and if I'm understanding correctly, that this ISS ship, tell me if I've got this right, the ISS ship was a bad guy ship. And it gets caught in this place. But the people that were on board were actually like shifting away from evil and going back towards good.
Correct. Yeah.
Redemption. This is
they
like
stole the ship.
And so one of the people that leaves that ship comes back to it later on to hide this clue, hoping that the clue's purpose of redemption and all that is going to be understood and known. And they give him and this Dr. Cho person. Is that person. So they come out of this wormhole on like their pods. What are they called?
Escape pods?
Pew, pew, pew. Yeah, escape pods. And they go out into our universe, join Starfleet, some of them.
Yeah.
And they join the Federation and they adapt into non-bad guy world.
Yep.
And that's what I was kind of coming to understand.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the crew of the ISS Enterprise rebels and mutinies. They steal the ship, and yeah, they escape. And the they escape with like the intent of going to our universe, which is way more optimistic. And yet they make it. A good chunk of the crew actually makes it. And then yeah, Dr. Cho gets promoted, becomes an admiral, is part of the team that does the progenitor stuff, puts this clue on the ship.
Okay.
And the message is: don't give up. Hope isn't lost. You can be good even if you're evil. There's complexity and stuff. It's just it's so like, it's because the thing is, even if that's your message, there's no guarantee that the person who finds the message will agree with you. It just means they're smart. It means that they figured it out. Like, you can make this as like, the message can be as wholesome and as like incredible as you want it to be, but the person who finds the clue just has to be intelligent. It doesn't mean they have to share your ideals to find the clue.
And also, how much more powerful would this message be if we had found a way to translate it back over to the crew that we're looking at on Discovery? So if we have this Rainer character who kind of has this sort of redemptive arc going with him, what if this message was less about backstory on Locke and Maul and more about how to apply this forgiveness style, and that would somehow help to unlock it? But it was just very loosely kind of put together, because I watched last episode thinking that Rainer has an ulterior motive, and then heading into this episode, it very quickly to me seemed like I'm just meant to ignore that instinct, and I can be wrong about his character motivation, but it's obviously not at this point, and maybe not ever, an intended purpose of the writer. Because if they were going to give a redemptive arc to someone, give it to Rainer.
Yeah.
Give it to this character. Maybe he was planning on mutinying the Discovery, and the ISS had been mutinied. So mirror that back on board, where maybe he is attempting to mutiny and we, the audience, know it, but nobody else knows it. And their redemptive story on the ISS is mirrored over on what potentially could be happening on Discovery, because that's the, that to me would be like some juicy storytelling. And I was just missing something a little bit more concrete, and I couldn't tell if it's because I was kind of like missing some of the deeper Star Trek lore, because we've got the Breen, we've got these different elements, they've got the ISS, this mirror universe, and all this stuff. And I was wondering if maybe there was some juicier stuff happening that I'm missing because I don't understand all the references as quickly.
I don't think so. I think the Breen context that's added is all brand new. Like, this is just like hypotheses and guesswork. Like, all that we've seen of the Breen essentially was on Deep Space Nine, and they're in masks, and they're the lackeys, and they're the boots on the ground, and they're an ally to the bad guys. They don't really dive into Breen culture very much. Federation doesn't know much about them. So this is more information than we've ever had. And I think that's more going to tie into like the overall season arc of what Luck is battling with. And with regards to the Enterprise, Book just reads it all from the plaque. Like, that's all the information you need, is that they know that the Terrans are the bad guys, and they know that this ship was filled with a crew that wanted a better life. That's all the context you need for this one. So I actually think they do a good job of that. But yeah, they don't do a good job of tying it in to the overall mystery. And I think the Rainer thing might just be, I'm beginning to think more and more, it was just a cadence thing that we picked up on. And that's going to happen. Like, that's, he does have a very unique cadence in the way that he delivers things. And I think part of us wants there to be more there, because that's fun. And I just don't think there will be in the end.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't a terrible episode. I felt the pacing on this one, because they relied really heavily on relationship stories. And historically, both you and I kind of like glaze over when it turns into a love story, especially when I don't feel like, well, you're tired of the Book and Michael love story, so thankfully it didn't go there. Really, it just kind of like brushed on it. It wasn't like they were falling back in love, you know what I mean?
But they are.
But they shifted it over to, you know, Maul and Locke. And I mean, these are really fascinating characters. It's not that I'm upset with how they're being portrayed. I love the prosthetic. I like how they're acting. I love that we have this like forbidden love story in a way, but.
Yeah, I like all of the elements. I just don't like how they boiled it. I like the elements of this cake. I do not like the method of cooking it.
Right. Well, it's like when somebody says they made a potato salad, but their potato salad is very different than the one that you like.
Yeah, oh, this isn't like, how I like my potato salad.
This is really, really mayonnaise forward, and I prefer mustard.
Oh, I love that, though. I've got to say, on the positive side, there are some visuals in this episode that are just so mouth-wateringly great. So freaking good.
Okay, which one got it for you?
Well, the one that
it's the same one that I got.
Yeah, it's the Enterprise coming out of the wormhole. It's with the tractor beam, the music. I was like, you bastards, like, this is cheap. This is you giving me a big juicy cheeseburger with
no
thrills, knowing that I'm a basic person that's just going to enjoy this fucking cheeseburger that's simply seasoned with fries and a milkshake, and I'm just going to love it. It was so great. It was so well done. Visually beautiful. A good old nonsense Star Trek escape plan, and we get to see the Enterprise nose to nose with the Discovery. I'm going to spoil this for you.
Which looks so cool.
It looks so, so cool. My all-time favorite moment of Discovery comes at the end of season one, and I'm not worried about spoiling this for you, because there's a distant universe where we do all of Discovery Season 1. The mission has ended. Everything is done. The season has been wrapped up. Out of nowhere, the Discovery receives a distress call from, and we don't know what it is. We don't know who the distress call is from until the NCC 1701 appears on someone's display. And the new Enterprise from Strange New Worlds just appears out of screen, appears in space, lowers down, and then comes nose to nose with Discovery. I had no idea it was going to turn up. I had no idea Strange New Worlds wasn't even announced yet. And it is one of the most chilling images I've ever... This updated Enterprise that just looked beautiful. And that just like, bam, that was the end of season one. I was like, wow, that had nothing to do with season one. And I loved it. So I'm a sucker for that. All of that to say, this was always going to get me. It's so, so well done. It's beautiful.
So was that the same ship from Strange New Worlds?
It's the same set. Yeah, it has to be. 100% the same set.
So,
yeah, 100%.
So this is like Discovery going next door and like
literally
filming on. Okay.
100%. Yeah.
And they just, you know, wrap the doors differently, put some new stuff on, 100%, make it look fucked up. Okay.
Absolutely.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. It's really, really fun.
I don't mind that.
I love
that. But we had a bottle episode last episode, and this very much felt like a bottle episode as well, didn't it?
Yeah. It's both with the last 5 minutes saying, we've got the next piece of the puzzle. This is where we're going next. They are both bottle episodes. Last week worked for me more. I think it's because of Raina. And I think the pacing was just better. And there was less of that. The focus was on Raina's relationship. This focus was on Luck and Mole, which is, it didn't give me much new. It just told me how they got together. It's like two of your best friends giving you their origin story of how they met. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm bored. Let's move on.
And here's... To that point, it's like it's not like the backstory. If I have a couple friends and they're deeply in love and they tell me about how they met, that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But if they try to qualify their love by telling me specific parts, it's like, I don't need you to qualify why you love each other.
Exactly.
It's pretty evident today, looking at you, that you love each other a whole lot. And I think
that's it. I didn't need it.
But this, I think, is us firmly having an understanding that the writers did not know that they had a ticking time, because they would not have written this the same if they knew that. They would have been folding in other stories to kind of like bring us forward. And really, the other things that we learn are minimal, I feel. Like, the doctor is kind of like having a crisis of faith in a way and not sure how to talk about it. Raynor is taking the lead and that's going well. Like, nothing really happened that made him stand out, except for he offered, I think, alcohol as a
citrus mash.
Citrus mash.
Yeah.
As a bonus. Which, by the way, everyone kind of came up with a solution. So I guess he's buying casks for everyone, which is great.
He did say citrus mash for all. Which is good for him. I mean, I liked how Raina came across in this episode, because it reaffirmed this. Oh, he's still going to be a dick. Like, he hasn't given up on his command style. It's still, I need this in a sentence.
Yeah.
Okay, fine. Give me another sentence. And he's still staying true to that, which he should. He hasn't been completely corrupted by Discovery.
Yeah.
I love that. So I think the way they handled Raynor was one of my favorite things in the episode.
Yeah, Raynor was, I didn't mind the Raynor thing, but again, I really, it bums me out that we're not kind of going into Wicked Raynor territory.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I get it. There'll be plenty of other corrupt Starfleet captains and commanders on our journey through Star Trek. The Breen thing is the other huge thing in this episode that I really, really liked.
Breen thing? Why not the Lensian filter that shows the wormhole? That's huge. I don't know. I'm talking about the one. I'm just being silly.
The repolarize the view screen so we can see the dodeca thingy. Yeah. I love it. When you take on an element of Star Trek history and decide, we are going to flesh this out, we're going to provide some answers that the fans have been asking for, we're going to give you some lore that, he says this with hesitance, can't be undone. This is now canon and this is what these people are. Like, that's a lot. Like, I can imagine sitting in the writer's room and just be like, whew, okay, let's do this. We're going to take on the Breen. We're going to add some backstory. We're adding to the fabric of Star Trek. And the way they did it was really great. It has that nuance of Star Trek tackling a different society and their viewpoint in a very Star Trek way. And how the Breen have these two faces, one of which they don't want to expose. And it does the cool thing of like still leaving more questions as well. Like, when did this adaptation happen? When did this evolution happen? Why is it so frowned upon? What does this provide for them? I love it. It gives the perfect context to the helmets that I think we suspected, while also being interesting. It's just visually so pretty. Their new faces are so pretty.
Yeah. And that's, I guess, something you know is, as a fan. So what we learned about the Breen today is brand new for everybody, or is it more brand like new than having two faces, for example? Has that been referenced before?
No. Someone's going to call me out. But to my knowledge, no. That has not been called out. In the books, I think I mentioned this last week, the books say that there's lots of different subspecies of Breen, and they all look different, and they all look like different ranks in society. And that's why they wear the helmets, so that everybody can stay anonymous. And it's a real, like, kind of taboo to take your helmet off. So there's definitely some influence of that.
So the Mandalorian.
Way more. Yes.
This is the way.
Yeah, this is the way. It's very similar, actually. This is a more stripped down version of that, where it's just, they're all the same. They all have these two faces, but they want to hide that.
Okay.
So did that work for you with somebody that doesn't have the same background knowledge of the Breen?
Yeah. And that part I didn't really mind too much. And, you know, maybe if they had taken all of the little Breen clues throughout the backstory and the flashbacks, and they had put it into one scene like I wanted them to do. And when I mentioned that, like, I wanted them to do that for the love part of it. But maybe if they were also trying to reveal Breen information, it could have felt way too heavy-handed. And maybe that's why they spread it out but across the episode, so that we are getting a flashback and we're getting a little bit more about Breen. Because if we had seen all of it at once, I think it would have been like, here's all the Breen information you want to know, and love story at the same time. And it just would have been too much. Yeah,
dump.
But the question is, did we need to know that about him? My assumption is that he might join the Federation. Like, he might join Starfleet. He could be the first Breen to kind of become, because he has this redemptive way of talking about things. Now, he's really intense. I really like Locke character.
He's more measured than Moll, isn't he? Like, everything he says kind of feels like he can be convinced, or like he's like, well, let's calm down and take a more sensible route. And Moll is like, let's go.
Moll is a bit unhinged.
Yeah.
I mean, she completely is she's the reason that the ship was about to crash, because she's like, I'm just going to do a power surge without thinking about it.
Let's put the handbrake on.
Yeah. So, but this Breen character, I think it works really well. He doesn't need to have a lot of expression for me. His eyes do a lot of the work, but he has like the black pupils, these bright blue eyes.
Yeah.
And that, alongside the CGI work, is really intriguing to me. And I want to just go back and just pause and look at that CGI, because it's almost like, instead of a brain, they have a galaxy in their forehead.
Yeah, it's just so this interesting. Sort
of, yeah, it's really interesting. But what Star Trek, to your point, did it work for me? Yes, because I feel like I know just as much as everybody else now, which is kind of cool. But also, it's just enough that in a future episode of Star Trek down the line somewhere, somebody could easily go and just dig into
expand,
and expand on it, because they've given just enough vagueness and just enough clues that it works, like the whole two-face system and this class system and this, really what's driving them is that they've done something that is so bad that the Breen will never stop hunting because of this word that I can't remember that I wrote down.
The Entriok Pact, Entriok E something. I think it began with E.
Okay.
Yeah. My notes are not as good as yours. My notes are empty. Yours are Tolkien.
And I mean,
that is useful to nobody, both of us.
I really do feel like I should just show my notes every time. They are pretty impressive, I have to say.
I love it. You've got the Silmarillion. I have a blank piece of paper.
And Erica, maybe?
Sounds right. So I thought she said Erica, and then Burnham reacted to it. And she was like, Erica? And I'm like, fuck, why can't I remember who Erica is? I'm such a bad Star Trek fan. Burnham knows who this is and I don't.
Yeah. But they end up explaining it. And would it have worked if it was all condensed? Maybe not. But yeah, it was really, I mean, it's interesting for me because if there's two standout things I was really excited about, maybe three, it would be his backstory of who he is, where he comes from, and what's behind the mask and why that's important. So that's juicy, and I loved that. Second would be our first officer and the way that he is. Like, I got chills. There's a moment when he goes to red alert, and then everyone goes like I captain or something, like or her, like they acknowledge that he has his leadership position. And everyone just kind of felt like it was clicking. But then we just cut away so much. I barely get any of that. That's what I wanted this episode. And then the last one is just more gorgeous shots. We did get some pretty cool visuals. Like, even the opening space sphincter was really cool looking. That it was pulsing made me very uncomfortable.
Star Trek loves a space vulva.
That we got to see a broken up Locke and Maul ship. Like, their ship was fucked. That was cool. I liked that.
Yeah.
So those are the things I would want to like amplify. But we did get to go back onto Strange New World set. Now that I know that, I'm like, that's why I was familiar. Because she looks over and she's like, that's where my brother sits. And I'm just like, I know that place.
I understand this reference. Yeah, it's amazing. It's kind of incredible that so much of it is so similar. But there we go. I completely agree. And I'm trying to think on it. Why is Discovery not doing the crew stuff that we love? So you mentioned how like everybody's saying "Aye, Captain," and they do the brainstorming on the bridge, but it's done in like 20 seconds and then they move on. And I think it has to be deliberate, because that is what every Star Trek show does, and it's what we love. Like, Strange New Worlds already has this really established crew that we love playing with. TNG does as well. Deep Space Nine, Voyager, TOS. It's common to every iteration of Star Trek, other than Discovery. Discovery is the only one that breaks that and is much more fluid with the people it introduces and the time that it spends with people. So I think I'm certain it's deliberate. I'm just sad it doesn't work, because I love this Discovery crew. And I think there's a world where this is more Discovery, which is so strange because that's the name of the show. But one of the most common fan complaints is that we don't firmly know all of the bridge crew of Discovery. Like, I couldn't rattle off their names as well as I can, even for Strange New Worlds. And it's a different approach, and I commend them for doing it. But I think just inherently, it's not going to have that same connection that we have with Strange New Worlds, TNG, Voyager, etc.
Yeah, it is a difficult part of writing characters, is how much to give and how much to kind of have be in the background. And for them to have spent, as you've told me, so much time really investing in the will they, won't they part of their story, and that not to be something that really works for a large portion of the audience, it is an interesting decision to make. And maybe they're just kind of playing around with what it looks like to kind of more focus on romance than story. You know, you've got this Rainer person who is like, I don't need to know who these people are to work with them. And maybe Discovery is kind of doing the same thing. Like, we don't need to know who these people are.
This is what I'm saying. Rainer really is, in a lot of ways, us, like the, I don't want to say negative, but the counter Discovery kind of discourse is very much in Rainer. Like, I don't need touchy-feely. I don't need I need the crew to work as a crew, and let's go. It's very, very, very interesting.
It is. It is very, very, very interesting.
Well, I think we've pretty much covered everything that happens in the episode. It's quite telling that it doesn't take us too long to get through it, because we haven't progressed it too much. Like, they catch up with Maul and Locke. They get the new piece of the clue, and now they're working.
That has a liquid element to it.
Yeah, they're identifying the liquid, and that will give them the next clue. And then we're into episode 6. Any thoughts before we move into Sins?
Well, and we didn't really go over predictions yet too. Are we gonna do that later, or do you want to do that now?
We can do that now. I guess the biggest, most impressive prediction for me, and this we mentioned it, came from Phil last week. I did have a back and forth with Phil, and he kindly admitted that it's kind of something that he heard online as well. It's a general fan prediction that was like, wouldn't it be cool if Locke was Breen? Well done to anybody who predicted that Locke was Breen. What an insane swing. Like, big, big, big swing. Great prediction.
Yeah, especially since having looked at the helmet last week to kind of familiarize ourselves a little bit. We were talking about that. And those helmets coming so far down the trunk like an anteater. These helmets are clearly a different version. Yeah. And so... But it's still just enough similar.
There's enough there.
I can see where it would be tempting to make that reach. But yeah, that's definitely the biggest reveal here. I think my predictions were something about Spock having the clue, which
you
definitely
said
didn't happen.
Spock will turn up and have the next clue, no Spock, I'm afraid. We didn't have that, but it wouldn't have really made sense for him to be there. Like, the way they did the Mirror Universe this week, it's kind of the only way they could do it, because they admitted that they know they can't travel between mirror universes. So if you want to do a mirror universe thing, you've got to find this in-betweenness space where where things can exist. And yeah, the other one you had was Reyna's hand injury will become terminal. I don't think that's going to happen. I'm sorry. I wanted that
too. It didn't seem like it. You know, sometimes when they're filming, they film things out of order.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's part of why. I can't get over it. I can't get over it.
It's broken you. I'm so sorry.
Well, it's just it's hard because it's hard when your version of what you think should happen, you want it to be true so badly that it shades you watching it. But it's okay.
Because it's okay. We could do a better job. And it's like being respectful that we're not in the chair. There's lots of different ways
so much,
of executing this. Yeah, exactly.
I've never had to consider how shows are actually written. I have my own imaginative version of how these things come together. And I know it's far more complicated than that.
It's amazing. Overall, pips. Okay, let's do it. Let's pip the episode.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think I'm going to give it like 1.5.
Mm. I'm at 2.
If I have to slide to a solid number, I think I would go to a 1.
Oh, yeah. What, if you can pin it down on one thing, what is it? Is it just the...
why I would go down?
Yeah. What's pushing you downwards?
That much time wasted on characters I genuinely don't give a shit about.
It's fair. Yeah.
Like it was most of the episode... And you know what? I wouldn't be doing this if these characters were Discovery characters.
Yeah, right?
I would be like, wow, this is obviously developing a part of the story that needs to be addressed, and I'm going to be here for it. But unless this ends on both of them surviving and joining Starfleet, I don't give a shit about them.
It's weird, isn't it?
Like, if they're going to go right off into the sunset on a shuttle... and Booker is all happy about it. Everyone's like, we did the right thing here, folks. I can't imagine this being more important than finding this device, this creature. Nothing that I was shown today seems to be more important than the plot line that they've already established as this most important, find this being, find this thing, do it fast. And the way that the clue was, you know, achieved, the convenience of both of our people being pushed out of sick bay at the same time, and they had to, everything was so conveniently put together.
Yeah.
And I just, it didn't work for me, and so I think I'll slide to a 1.
Yeah, I'm in a 2 purely because
if I have to do, can I do halves?
Yeah, you can do halves.
I'm at a 1.5.
Yeah, I've been lenient on that. We can do halves.
Some of the stuff really worked for me, but maybe that's why it's a 1 and not a 0.
No, I think you're absolutely fine. I think we will look back on this episode and it will stand out as, oh, you really didn't realize this was the last season, because this is such a bizarre way, not bizarre, it's such a interesting way to spend your time, to spend what limited time you have left to invest so much into characters that will be forgotten. Like, we just want to spend more time with what little time we have left, we want to spend it with Discovery. I don't know how you choose to spend it with Locke and Moll. When you know this is the last season.
I have to bring this up from the chat. The prediction that Maul and Locke will go martyr. That would potentially be a reason to give them screen time. To justify that they would somehow sacrifice their lives for the Discovery.
Yeah.
And maybe what we saw in this episode gives us just what we need to verify and qualify that. Like, they're on a train out of control. And they both have... unquestionably said, we will die before we're taken in if we're separated. So what do you do with a character like that? You either have to find a way to completely redeem them or kill them. And killing them in for the Discovery makes a lot of sense, Zero. I think that was a really good comment. That might be the only justified reason to have them on screen so much.
Yeah, but that's what I said at the top of the episode, is that one of them will die, and I predict it's going to be Luck. Like, the only way you spend this much time with them is if one of them's dying, because that's the only way you kind of feel that real punch. And I think they want us to feel a real connection. And it makes sense to kill Luck because he's the one we're going to empathize with. We're always going to empathize with the underdog. And he is the underdog of the Breen that is rebelling against the, why can't I just look how I want to look? This is just as me as the other face. So we're gonna have extra feelings for him, and then you kill him.
Yeah.
Is how I feel that's going
to
go.
Yeah. It's strange because I'm going to say this before we go on. I have to say, I wish there was a way to have let the writers know that this was the end before filming.
Yeah.
Because I think we would have gotten such a different story. Imagine if there does need to be a sacrifice and it came from a Discovery person instead of these throwaway characters. That's the last thing I think I have to say before we go on to the sins.
Yep. No, I'm at two. And what I was about to say is that the only thing that kind of bumps it up a little bit for me is the way that they handled the Breen and had the kind of courage to go after a kind of part of Star Trek lore and kind of give it a nice background and a good story. And I'm just a sucker for the visual effects, and the Enterprise was just beautiful, perhaps unnecessary, but it was another loose end tied up. And again, I think done really, really, really well. I really liked that part. But yeah, skip. Well, with that, let's head over to engineering to do some sins. Redestations, whatever.
Redestations, everyone.
Redestations, everyone. Black alert.
Black alert. Black alert. Black alert.
This is the part of the show where we remind ourselves that no TV show is without sin, even our beloved Star Trek. Go ahead, Ambassador. Give us some nitpicking.
Probably my biggest sin is the forced fight in sickbay. Not the entire fight, but how they got into it, where they go into the room firing and then try to talk when they could have talked from outside of sickbay.
100%.
Like, just say, hey, we don't want to get into a fight here, blah, 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 blah. Like, they could have let them know that they were not attacking them, that they were firing at the hall. Like, it was just so... It was such a forced conflict situation.
All of it was very, very forced. And Molly even calls it out, like, hey, you're the ones that came in here firing, as if to, like, kind of wink at the camera. I'm like, yeah, good point. All of this could have been hollered from the doors. The reason is you have to get them into sickbay so that we can lead into my biggest sin, which is the convenient force field of emotional separation, which is, wow, look how that worked out. Just managed to separate Book and Mole so that they could have their time together on the bridge. Like, it's, my eyes were just rolling into the back of my head, and I'm like, cool, get them to where you need them to be, but it's super duper duper sinful to have the force field separate them so that they can have their time together, and so that Burnham can have time with Luck as well. Just all of the contrivance.
There was one fade out from history, and I think it was that it worked really well, and I think we could have done maybe two flashbacks and accomplished what we needed. I really believe that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In that second flashback with it ending with Locke saying, I love you, you know that, and it fades into the now, that was really powerful. And, you know, he's dying or he's wounded, and that was a really kind of powerful moment that I wouldn't want to miss out on a forced back and forth. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. But yeah.
I think that's a credit to
popped into my mind.
The actor that's playing Luck, I think he is doing a really great job. I think he's emoting really well. His voice, let me try to look up the name. Yeah, his voice is really convincing. And just the makeup effects are so good. I like how we've waited to the sins to actually say some more positive stuff about them.
Yeah, sorry, just popped into my head. You know me.
No, you're great. I completely agree.
Two Faces? Mm. It's T-O-U-F-E-X-I-S.
If his last name is Two Faces, that's amazing.
It's T-O-U-F-E-X-I-S. How would you say that?
I have no idea. Two Faces? That's amazing.
Two Faces? That'd be fucking crazy.
That's what I just said. That's incredible.
I know. I agree with you. And you know what? Elias listens to our show, so he'll just let us know.
Please call in. Call in.
Oh my God.
Right now. If you're in the live show, call in.
Oh my God, if we had a live hotline.
Oh my goodness.
During our live show, can you imagine the shenanigans that our live audience would pull on us?
We have that. It's just called comments. We just don't have their voices.
Imagine if it was audio. Imagine if they called in. That'd be absolutely fucking crazy.
Amazing. Right. Next sin. I did my emotional separation sin. What was your next one?
Let me go back to my notes because I was just reading about this character and I can't wait to tell you what I looked up.
Oh, tell me now. Do it.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's about the actor.
Let's do it.
Okay. So I like to tell you where I'm reading from because I'm obviously Googling on the fly here, but it was cinemablend.com. Let's see. So Elias, did I say that was his first name?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I don't know how to say it. Yeah, Elias. Is a massive Star Trek fan, but he didn't find out how significant his role as Locke in the final season was until he was in a spot where Understandably, wild reactions and jerky movements are discouraged. So this is the quote from him at that time, which is why I was excited. He says, when I went to the makeup test, I had to put on the whole plaster where you sit there for 20 minutes and try not to pass out, try not to freak out. Like, so that's how they mold the headpiece. But I said, can I look at what I'm going to look like? And they showed me some concept art. And I said, well, what is he? And they said, oh, he's going to be a Breen. And I was, he goes, I was like, Breen don't take their helmets off. And that was the first thing I said. That's as much of a nerd as I am. And I'm like, are you telling me that I'm going to be the first Breen that takes this helmet off? And the makeup guys are geeks too. So they're like, yeah, it's going to be cool. That's it's going to be the first time in Star Trek. And that got him really excited. This is a really interesting article. I instantly want to read the rest of it, but I'm not going to here on the show.
That's really, really cool.
Can you imagine your head is in a plaster and you can't like go,
freaking out. What a cruel time to tell him. Yeah. By the way, you're a Breen and you can't do anything about it.
How crazy is that?
How many layers of awesome is that? That's so fun. Oh, I love that. That's awesome.
That's how you find out. You don't even find out. Like, that's how you find out is that the makeup people tell you. And to know that part of your character because you're such a fan, that's really fun.
Yeah, to have that in-depth knowledge.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm trying to think of what the comparison would be. That's so fun. Oh, love that.
Okay, I've got someone is in the chat is saying it's Two-Fexis.
Two-Fexis. That makes sense. Yeah.
Well, that's not nearly as exciting as Two Faces.
Elias Two Faces. Okay. That's what we're sticking with.
I don't know if this is a sin or not. You're going to have to tell me. They're on the ISS. They're out of time. They're going to crash. They go onto the bridge.
Mm-hmm.
He goes and sits down at a station to help navigate.
Yep.
And she goes and sets her sweet ass in a chair. What the fuck, Michael? What the fuck?
I love this. This is amazing.
Go sit somewhere else where you can push a goddamn button and be useful. Like, don't just sit there like, yep, I'm the captain. This is my chair. You know what? No. Fuck you. Go sit down and do something. I was so pissed and I was so distracted too. I kept like getting angrier and angrier the more that went on. I thought maybe like a little panel would pop up and she'd be able to do something besides be like, oh, hey, Michael, how's it going up there? Like, get the fuck up and go help the man.
Because we've seen Picard sit in his chair, his like pad will flip up and he'll do some pressing and he'll do some things. But there are four of you on this ship. You don't even have a full bridge crew, let alone anything else.
Two of them are gone. They're not on the bridge helping
you. Oh, shit, they're not even on the bridge. It's just him and her and Booker.
It's just the two of them. And she sits in that seat. Like, yeah, we get it.
It kind of makes everyone else redundant. You should be in the science station just because you want to sit on the bridge of the Enterprise. Like, I think that's why. And
listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
That's a good one. Listen.
I don't fucking care. When they were on the shuttle, she was beep-bop-a-dooping away. She had stuff to do. She was helping navigate. She was monitoring stuff. But then all of a sudden, when they are in imminent danger and they're going to fucking die, she sits back like, hey, let me tell you about this one time that I saw a past version of us and we were happy. Shut the fuck up and go sit down and do something.
That's a good one. I like that. I think there just would have been riots if they hadn't let Burnham sit in the captain's chair. But you're right. It makes no sense.
She had plenty of time to fucking survive.
Yeah. Yeah.
She could have gotten, she could have stood up. You know why they did it? You know why they did it? I just figured it out.
Go on.
I know why they did it. Mm-hmm. They did it so that she could do that fucking fly line.
Oh, yeah. The let's fly.
That's why.
Instead of hit it. That feels weird. Just say it. Just say hit
but
it.
But I did understand that reference and that was fun.
Yeah, you did. You were very happy that you understood that reference. You went full Captain America. I understood that reference. Amazing. My next one is a cliche. You'll get a fair trial cliche. This is particularly shitty because if they do get a fair trial, they're going to prison. Like, a fair trial isn't what they want. They want an unfair trial that lets them go free. Like, that's not a very appealing sentiment when you're a criminal and you have stolen things and you're on the run. Like, don't promise them that they won't get a trial. Like, you're not going to get a trial. It's fine.
I totally agree with you. I had this thought during the show where I was like, how is this going to incentivize Locke to come over to their side? But I appreciated that that Michael wasn't mincing words. She wasn't bullshitting. She was honest.
Yeah.
And again, the idea that like the Federation is about second chances. And that felt like a real moment to me where she is using what she can. So yeah, it's not a great incentive.
Mm-hmm.
But it's better than Booker telling her that her shit dad that disappeared was great to him. Yeah. You know, like, they're both not doing well.
No, they're both failing in there. And still, yeah. it kind of basically works. Like, get enough cooperation out of them. Yeah.
But I feel like the point was, serve your time, get out, and you'll be fine. And that is also a legitimate thing to say. Like, that's not too crazy. And Locke was like, well, can I have a cell with my girlfriend? And yeah. that seemed like a stretch to me, but it also is telegraphing that they're going to die, right? Like they're going to die.
Oh, yeah, 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 for sure. I guess
that moment, more than anything, probably indicates that the show has, quote unquote, done all it can do to save these characters. And so their inevitable death isn't going to be questioned by a fan who liked them because, quote unquote, they tried. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they tried. Exactly. Yeah. And we're at the halfway point as well. So we now have, like, in theory, 5 episodes where they can be happy the character work is done and go full throttle into the adventure. I hope, he says hopefully. Just make 8 episode seasons if you can't fill 10 episodes. Yeah, my next sin was a really nitpicky, probably a bit shitty sin, but the Enterprise shouldn't have a holo emitter in its sick bay. It doesn't have a holodeck. We don't have any mention of a holo emitter in that was like a thing that they were really proud that Voyager had, because they have the emergency medical holograms. There were holodeck emitters and buffers in the sick bay, and that was a big development. So I don't understand why this one has a holo emitter, and I don't think it's one that Locke and Mole brought with them, because A,
it could be.
Yeah, but A, you just happened to have one with you as you were running off of the ship that just got blown up, and B, Burnham says the sick bay is holo emitter. Like, she recognizes it as one that belongs to the sick bay. So they kind of damned themselves. And fine. This Enterprise does and the old one doesn't. But it's a bit of a glaring one.
Yeah.
And I guess maybe the ISS Enterprise is different to the USS Enterprise. Fine. But I don't like it.
The chat on that same point said, how did the emitter get there? The ship is from over 1,000 years in the past, or did Mull and Locke have one handy?
Yeah, that's the point I'm making. Yeah, this Enterprise shouldn't have a holo emitter.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That so technology it's not just that Sick Bay has one, it's that it shouldn't exist ship-wide.
Oh, no, they've admitted that the Discovery does, and the Enterprise doesn't, because Pike specifically said, I want view screens, I don't want holograms, I don't want us to communicate with holograms, I don't trust it, I don't like it. But specifically, like, Sick Bay has never been shown to have one. That's what I'm getting at. And, like, if it does have one, there's lots of ways it would and should have been used. I guess we'll find out in the new season of Strange New Worlds. But well, it's probably that the ISS is different.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Still getting sin somewhere.
I don't know whether to sin or take a sin off for Linus playing the piano. Like,
yeah, I had that as well.
Like,
I guess,
like,
Linus plays the piano now.
Isn't that from the Peanuts? From, like, Charlie Brown world?
I've never seen
Doesn't
it.
Doesn't Linus play the piano, or is it different? Is Linus a different character?
I don't know.
Who plays?
I've seen the holiday special. I have not watched the show. I hated it. Hated that holiday special so much.
Oh, no. It's Schroeder. Schroeder plays the piano. Schroeder, that's right. What Linus is dick. One of their characters. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that it was kind of a funny thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fucking Linus.
Fucking Linus, man.
But yes, Linus now plays the piano. Of all of the instruments to play, it's amazing. My next two were just father stuff, skip, codependency, skip.
Skip. So much
skippage.
So much. I want to give a sin off for the moment when they're solving this problem of how to stretch the sphincter. And
yep.
And they kind of, like, all collectively come up with this idea. They're changing photon torpedoes to antimatter something, and it needs to be done in a hexagonal pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And the captain's like, why hexagonal? And the guy cuts in and he's like, you know what? It doesn't matter. It's going to work. And I thought that was really funny, because it's kind of a way to just, like, either stop the banter back and forth. Maybe it's an inside joke for the show. I don't know. But even though I kind of am missing a lot of techno babble,
I
found that to be pretty funny.
For me, it stood out a bit.
That might have been the only time I laughed the entire episode.
I liked it because it's Stamets kind of adjusting to Rayner's command style as well. Just like, I know you're not going to hear the words that I'm saying. Trust me, you don't need to be, like, I'm an engineer, not a doctor. Like, you don't need to understand this. It's fine. But for me, it was a hexagonal bit that stood out, because they're not usually so specific about the shape thing. And the fact that he said, why hexagonal? I was like, Yeah, I had that question as well. Why does hexagonal matter? Because I don't think space cares. And then they're just like, we're not going to explain why. And I was like, oh, you don't actually have a reason, do you? That was a setup.
But that was the
fun part.
It felt
like a setup for the joke.
I don't know. It's either the show folding back on Rainer saying, I want to use less words. Like, it
oh,
was
it's
like
100%
Rainer...
that.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying.
Which,
like,
which
it felt like an
for
obvious
me
setup.
Too. But also it works for me on a technobabble sense, because sometimes I'm just like, just make it stop. I don't care why it works. Just keep going. You know, we had so much technobabble. I think last episode there was a lot.
Love it so much. Give me more.
There was a lot going on last episode.
Yeah. It, my sin for that moment is that it was my understanding that photon torpedoes worked with antimatter already. I didn't think you had to add any. I thought the whole point was that they are tiny antimatter explosions. But maybe I'm misunderstanding torpedoes. I'm sure somebody will email in. But I'm pretty sure they already have antimatter in them.
I don't know. I feel like I really want to send the whole 3-4-1-4 thing. It is such a phenomenal, colossal leap in logic.
3-4-1-4?
So the beam comes out of the hole.
Yeah.
And is like pulsing at 3-4-1-4.
Oh, right.
Which
I missed
references
that.
To like a poem or
oh,
like something.
Sorry,
I don't know.
How Burnham communicated with Rainer. Yeah, Morse code essentially.
But it's not Morse code.
No.
It's like
not.
it's as if someone is telling you to go pick up your favorite book and go to a specific chapter to find a specific phrase that means I'm coming out of this fucking hole. Unless that reference was about birth and stretching and prepare.
Yeah.
Like it.
This poem is about
and
a childbirth.
I kind of like missed how that specific 3-4-1-4 thing referenced what he needed to know. Like I missed the part where
I think it was a military strategy. I think
it's like a military strategy
beat.
That specifies I'm coming out of a hole on another ship now.
It was like a drum beat to do with an oncoming army or something like that. It was specific to their situation, but it was like it was another callback to Burnham having researched the Kelleran society to know more about him.
It's a way for us to know that Michael really understands her first officer. Uh-huh. And I totally understand that, but we already had that moment earlier. She already established that she knows about his culture earlier in the episode. But this is like a strong, like, yeah, I referenced this thing that you're supposed to just immediately under, like, how would you know?
Chekhov's,
anyway.
Chekhov's cultural research. Chekhov's historical database. No, I'm with you.
It did go by really, really fast.
No, I'm with you. And it's quite a classic Star Trek cliche thing, this very specific thing to reference back to.
Yeah. And I really, like, I want to understand it. I really do. But it's in that kind of section where.
Yeah.
They're walking, talking back to the
hexagons.
Room to talk about Cho. And it's in that walk and talk where he's like, I'm really impressed that you knew about this part of this thing that I did that happened in history or a poem. I don't remember what it was.
Anyway. It's hexagonal stuff. You don't need to know about it.
That's right. It's too many words.
This is probably my biggest sin of the entire episode. Probably the biggest sin of the whole season is that you put that fucking ship in the trailer, you bastards.
Oh.
Yeah, the Constitution class ship, we don't know if it's the Defiant or the Enterprise or the Endeavor or whatever it is. We don't know it's ISS. We just know that it's Enterprise looking, and it's in the this season on Discovery trailer thing, and it's coming out of the sphincter. So it was spoiled for me. I knew it was coming. As soon as I saw them go into the nebula, I was like, this is where we're going to see it because the color of the gases match. So I was spoiled on it. But it's... there's no need. It's a great reveal. And also, I'm not watching because you showed me that in the trailer. Like, that didn't affect whether I was going to watch this season or not. And if it was supposed to do that, you don't have a lot of faith... It shows a lack of faith in the story that you're telling if you need to dangle little things like that in front of me. So yeah, just let it be a better surprise and just let it hang there on its own merit instead of putting it in the trailer.
Yeah.
There we go.
Now, this is not a sin. This is one that I would like have to ask about because I don't understand. But who are Detmer and
Weishakun. Yeah,
because it's like a little casual mention at the end, and because I don't watch the show, I don't feel like I can actually send this part, but it's like, we're going to put these guys on the ship and then send the USS bad guy, the ISS back to the place so that it can probably become a museum of some kind.
I would love that so much. So Awaishakun and Detmer...
And what kind of Terran stuff are they going to pull out of that thing and learn? Like, anyway.
Well, either way, it's going to be 1,000 years out of date. I love that this version of the Enterprise now exists in the Discovery universe as well. It's just, it's fun to have hanging around.
Yeah, it's going
to
be out there.
Detmer and Awaishakun, we have seen them in last week's episode. They were arguing with Burnham, and they were like really offended that she was going to be captain. They're the two women that sit at the front of the ship.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about now. And she's got like the little eyepiece. Thing, the eyepiece.
Exactly. And the way she has like the really cool hair. So yeah, that's, and we love them. We fucking love them. They're like the closest we have to Geordi and Data, where they're like, they're fun. Really buddy buddy.
Wait, have I seen them except for in the flashback? Or in the time travel? I don't think I've seen them.
They might have been walking around in the conference in the first episode. One of my ongoing sins is that they aren't in it enough. They're two people we aren't spending enough time with. I kind of get it for Awaishakun because the actor that plays her is directing a lot. So she shifted into a big directing role for Discovery. Totally get it. But they have such a fun dynamic. They're so fun together. Detmer is like this maverick Top Gun pilot. Awaishakun is like a fighter and just really cool. And yeah, we just don't get to see enough of them.
So then this sin is just them not being here enough for me to see them.
Yeah, 100%.
Which we've already sinned the show for not showing us the crew enough, so I guess we could specify them. Yeah.
Specify them specifically. The shuttle is bullshit that they escape on that medical shuttle.
So
why is that still there?
They have a warp-capable shuttle that they didn't know about to get off earlier.
Yeah, it's a medical shuttle that they found that they escaped with because reasons.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, indeed.
Wow. Yeah, that was sure convenient.
It would have been cooler if they stole the Enterprise, to be honest. Like, they beamed them off and then ran away in the ISS Enterprise. But I guess they wouldn't get far because it's fucked up.
Yeah, I think we've pretty much sinned it. There's like little nitpicky things I could definitely talk about. Did you understand the reference to the chameleon stuffed toy?
No, okay. I didn't. I felt like I should. I felt like it was deliberate. But I
was
didn't.
That somebody's room we were supposed to have a connection to?
Perhaps. I need to rewatch there's an episode where we go, there's an episode in TOS where we are on the ISS Enterprise in its prime. Bad choice of words. In its, when it's doing things, and maybe there's a chameleon in there somewhere. I can't remember.
Yeah. And then she picks up a necklace as well.
Oh, that's just to hide the fragment that she has.
And the fragment is from her communicator so that if they scan it, they can see future tech.
She can pretend that it's something from their universe that is the clue. Yeah.
That's the part that I followed. And I thought that was a decent payoff within the episode, like as to what she was doing.
Yeah, that's a good tactic.
But there's got to be something about what was on that locket, too. Like, you know that there's a picture that was like,
See what the picture was. We did get to see it, but I couldn't see who it was. Might have been Spock, actually. But I can't.
Wouldn't it be interesting if that was? I don't know.
I
didn't know if it was hers.
Yeah,
like,
I kind of thought it might be, but I didn't get a good look at the picture.
That's kind of sweet.
The other, with the necklace thing, man, just tell Book your plan. Like, tell Book that that's your plan, because what if he looked around and just given it away? Just as like an instinct. Just like, huh? I was like, well, thanks, Book. Thanks for giving it away.
Yeah, just kind of like you're walking, talking anyway. If you have time to talk about how you're feeling about each other, you have time to be like...
Unless she doesn't fully trust him, but then you've got bigger problems. My last sin, we kind of mentioned it in the episode, was just how these clues are turning out to be bullshit, and how the people that are playing them, there's no way of guaranteeing that the Borg aren't going to find these clues and just be really smart about it. Like, all of your puzzles, they don't prevent an evil person from finding the clues and using the weapon. The lessons you're teaching, there's no guarantee that's going to teach anybody to do the right thing, as evidenced by Locke and Moll. Like, Moll isn't learning the lessons that you're teaching her. She's just getting the clues and then moving on. So it seems weird. Just destroy it all. If you don't want it to be used, destroy everything. There's got to be some good payoff for why the scientists hid the clues this way, because it's not proving that a good person is going to find the tech.
Are you ready to go on to predictions?
Yeah, let's do it. If that's everything, let's head over to the ready room for some predictions.
Welcome to the Captain's Ready Room, where we hear our predictions for the rest of the season and bask in our queue like glory for anything that we've previously predicted that we've previously said has come true previously.
Which we kind of did. We kind of did that
already with the Breen and whatnot. Kind of did a little bit. We can't claim to have predicted that.
I want to go forward and I want to ask you this. Uh-huh. What do you think the liquid is?
I think the liquid...
It's a changeling!
Yeah, it's a changeling. I don't think the liquid is a changeling. It'd be interesting, though.
That's kind of sad. I kind of want it to be like a little changeling. Like, is that enough liquid for a changeling? A little bitty one?
I don't know. They fit into a vase. I haven't seen them fall into some... stay into something that small.
It's not a bucket, but...
Not a bucket.
It's bucket-esque. Very cool.
If that was Odo, I would... Well, wait. Sorry, I just broke my brain. No, the actor that played Odo died, so it can't be Renee. It would have to be another changeling, I think. It would be strange considering season 3 of Picard was based around changelings as well. That would be weird.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. But everyone's forgotten about that.
I think this is going to be specific, a sample of the DNA that was used to seed the planets throughout.
That's what the chat said. Whoa.
Oh, is it? Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be DNA of the that they use to seed the universe. And I think embedded in it is going to be the coordinates for the next clue. That's usually the DNA will be resequenced and it will give coordinates that are hidden in there.
Some kind of special code in the protein strands. Yada yada. Oh my god. They're going to yada yada the protein.
Wait,
stuff.
They're going to yada yada something? No. In Star Trek? Never. That's okay. My big one.
Okay. That makes sense. Yeah. I wasn't sure what it was. I kind of want it to just be water.
It would be great. I want it to be Romulan ale. It's Romulan ale. That's what it is.
Wouldn't that be really funny?
That would be incredible.
Oh, the chat pointed out that they said that there's three organics in sickbay.
Well, the fact that Burnham didn't react to that more made me think that she just picked up three signals. Like, the two life forms and then something new.
What if it is?
It would be great. If it's a changeling, I'm all for it. It'd be fucking awesome.
Oh, that'd be so fucking cool, right?
Be really, really cool.
Oh, man. Three signatures.
I thought she meant it was
Are signatures
three...
different than organics?
I thought she meant it was three signatures from their universe.
Oh, sci-fi brony. Maul is Preggers? Oh, what if it is? Oh, my God. And she's having a half whatever she is, half free baby.
That doesn't make any sense, though.
It could. Because
Burnham
could
would
make
have
sense.
Said, hey, you're
this
pregnant.
This is science fiction. Okay, well.
Yeah, that's what I figured, that it was signatures from their universe.
Oh, because a signature is an item as well as a person, and yeah. The item would have been the clue.
And things from the mirror universe have a different quantum signature.
Oh, God damn it. Well, there goes that idea, and that other idea, and then also the third idea.
All of the
ideas. That was kind of exciting. I mean, doing predictions with a live chat is thrilling.
It's a
journey.
That was
super fun.
Yeah.
I loved it. I don't know what it is. I'm thinking about it. I think you're right. I think it's DNA, though. I think you're right.
It's got to be, sadly.
But I really want it to be like a little tiny changeling. Like
tiny
a little
baby
fairy
changeling.
Sized with little
and then
wings.
Then it could get even bigger.
I'm so cute.
It would sound like the Enterprise.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would love it to be a fairy. I'd love it to be Tinkerbell. Full crossover into Disney. Amazing.
Right.
Would you like to know next week's episode title?
Yes, please.
The next episode is called... Whistle speak.
I'm sorry, can you say that again, please?
Whistle speak.
Whistle speak.
Whistle speak.
Hey, Sunny.
Whistle speak.
Oh, what does that
no
fucking
idea.
Mean?
Haven't got a clue. I'll have to Google it.
I don't know how to interpret anything. Like, I'm guessing, wouldn't it be great if they discovered a new creature, like a new species on the next one, and that had a way of talking that was whistle speak?
It would be amazing. The entire episode is just literally whistles. That would be amazing.
I mean, I wouldn't really like that very much, but they would maybe do what they did with the Breen, where they kind of had them speaking their own speak, and then they can kind of flip over into... So
I think it's going to be a code of some sort. It's going to be a code that they have to decipher.
Music?
One of the
oh my God, is it going to be a musical?
Could be a musical episode. I think they would have advertised that a bit more.
Spoiler for those of us who don't watch anything.
One of the themes they haven't touched on yet, I think, is communication. So I think the next clue might require them to communicate with an alien species that speaks in a way that the universal translator can't get to. It's going to be their Darmok episode, is what I would expect.
Oh, great.
I'm predicting a reference to Darmok.
But But there was also that episode, I think it was one of the first episodes of Strange New Worlds, where Spock and Uhura had to sing in the cave.
Oh, in the
to
comet.
Communicate.
In the comet. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Ah. And that...
Ethan Peck's like beautiful that. Baritone. Yeah.
Oh, Ethan
Peck. Yeah. No Ethan Peck this episode. No Tig Notaro. Yeah,
that,
and no Fred.
I should have sinned the show for that.
Yeah.
No Fred. God yeah. damn it. Yeah. I think it's going to be a communication thing. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that'll be the crux of it.
As far as like relationally, I'm seeing a conversation between the doctor about science and religion. Maybe they're going to kind of press on that a little bit.
Spiritualism, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm kind of hopeful.
Yeah.
There might be some more momentum on Michael and Rayner having to get along. It was really interesting because I kind of thought that they were going to be really trying to connect more in this episode, but they were immediately separated again. So we really don't see them arguing about what to do. In fact, he actually took her to the ready room or wherever to say, hey, I don't think you should be going on a mission, which, by the way, was another sin. But that happened all the time.
I totally forgot to mention that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the sin. It's actually sin removal because he finally says the captain should not be going on this mission, but she goes anyway. There's no reason for Burnham to be on that mission. She should stay with the crew.
Yeah. Yeah.
He was
I
right.
mean, I kind of got it, but at the same time, it just seems like that's just something that happens all the time. So it
amazing.
Would be a captain must go on away mission cliche for sure. I'm trying to think about other things that we really need to see happening on the screen to sort of.
Oh, Saru, probably.
You think we're going to have a Saru callback? There hasn't been anything about the purists or whatever they were called.
I think we'll have a couple of scenes with Saru and the purists, and I think they're going to throw a spanner in the works.
Yeah. Moopsie might come over.
That would be a strong callback. We could get our first Lower Decks reference in another Star Trek series.
It's not the first one.
Something that Lower Decks creates that's referenced in another Star Trek? That hasn't happened yet.
Oh, I was thinking more about the crossover with the Strange New Worlds crew.
Oh, no. I mean specifically like that, because Lower Decks is such a reference fest, I think their ultimate honor would to have something they created be referenced in another episode of Star Trek. It'll happen eventually. Well, I think that's our big swings for next week, our big predictions. If you have any or anything you'd like to email to the show, send it over to @captainspod. Send it over to captainspod@cinemasins.com, @captainspodcs on @X/Twitter, or to the CinemaSins Discord in the Captain's Pod channel. We have a nice spoiler discussion in there and a general Star Trek chat at discord.gg/cinemasins. What were you going to say, Ambassador?
I was going to say that we're enjoying reading them. So.
Oh, very, very much.
I'm glad we're doing this because you guys have some fun ideas about what might be happening.
I love the big swings. And who knows, your next big swing could be the Breen. So send it in. Until next week, we will return at the regular time. If you want to catch us for the live show, live on Twitch, YouTube, the CSPN channel on YouTube. We go live on Twitter and X as well at 12:30 CST. And we will be covering Discovery Season 5, Episode 6, Whistle Speak. But until then, I'm Captain Ian, and it's a bottle of citrus mash all around from me.
And it's hi, I'm Danae. I like Latinum and long walks on the beach from me.
Live long and pods back.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Check, check, check. Test, test, test. 10:56. I'm early. Where is the fucking captain? Isn't he always early? Oh, he's like Gandalf. He arrives precisely when he means to. Restore the pages as they once were. No, thank you, Chrome. I don't remember how many I had open. I don't have time to review them all. Let's just let the past be the past. Stop tempting me to go back in history and figure that out. Ian!
Test, test, test. Yeah, I should probably do that before I stop. Wait, can you not hear me? Can you hear me?
Oh,
okay.
Oh, no. Are you okay? What just happened to you?
Well, I got really, really cold, so I put my cardigan on. And then in about 2 minutes, I got really, really hot, so I took it off. And now I'm really cold again.
Wow.
That's my life.
That was legit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You sounded like a sea creature, like a squid or... There's an episode of Bluey where the dads pretend to be an octopus. You sounded like that.
Oh, that's amazing. Because I was going for Jar Jar Binks's people, the Gungans.
Never do that.
No, it's true. But
never
the guy that's the head of the Gungans, like big boss, some I can't remember his name. But he, when he like approves of something, he's like, "You saw being friends," and he does the wobbly thing. I won't be doing that again. Woo.
Can I tell you something that happened to me today?
Yes, please.
I decided to take a shower, wash my hair, and then like put product in it and blow dry it.
Okay, cool.
This is abnormal for me for many reasons. Yes, including just taking a shower.
Yes.
I live at my house. I barely leave it. So I'm just like this little homebody stinky troll woman. And I'm going to blow dry my hair.
Mm-hmm. With a blow dryer or a microwave or the oven?
The blow dryer specifically. Okay, Thank you for clarifying.
Yep.
Because I didn't want to come on to the live show with wet hair. I didn't want to put it on my headphones, all this stuff.
Yep.
So that means I have to find the products with which to use. I do a great job except the hairbrush. I can't find it. So I go to Iris's bathroom and get her hairbrush. I'm brushing my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And
what's in her hairbrush?
Peanut butter.
Yeah. Man. Okay. There we go. Yeah. I was going to guess chocolate. So there's peanut butter in her hairbrush from the last time you brushed her hair to get peanut butter out of it?
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I can't ask the peanut butter how long it's been there or got there.
Right.
But it's now in my hair, so that's fun.
Did you wash it out again, or are you just keeping the peanut butter in there?
No, I just decided to just be peanut butter. So I have this lovely scent of peanut today. Mm. It's just like this light little hint. You know, some people wear lavender.
Yeah.
I'm going all peanut.
Scent of nut butter. That's not what you want in your hair.
That is my scent today.
Yeah.
If anyone asks why I smell so good, I'll just say nut butter.
It's great for the skin. Do you want to hear something weird in the land of Star Trek?
That is what the show is supposed to be about, so sure.
But you seem reluctant. You're like, nah, not really. It's because the next 3 hours is going to be Star Trek.
Three. Yeah. More like 4 hours. We have 4 hours of Star Trek every Friday.
The last few weeks have been 4 hours. Yeah. Sorry. Not sorry. Well, you remember Star Trek Prodigy, the animated kids Star Trek show that we haven't watched. We haven't watched.
We talked to the writer.
Yeah, we did.
Guy.
Mm-hmm. Aaron.
What's it? Aaron. Yeah.
Well, it got cancelled by Paramount and then removed from the service and then added onto Netflix. And we know that this all happened after season two had finished recording. So we haven't seen season two, but it's in the bag. It's done. It's edited. It's like, cool, but where is it going to live? Well, a couple of weeks back, a French streaming channel just aired it. All of season two, just all of the episodes just landed. And we're just like, look at it. Go for it. Woo. Have some Prodigy. And it was just this huge communication. Somebody at Paramount knew, or somebody, whoever's deciding the distribution, probably CBS, Paramount, whatever it is, sold it to this French company. And the French streaming company was just like, yeah, we've got it now. Let's put it out there. But like, I can't imagine the frustration of creating something and then having no power over it. It's just like, yeah, it's made. Who knows when it's going to be out there? Who's going to get it? Who's going to be able to see it? And it's in French.
There are so many questions I have, but for the time limitation, did they hire French actors to go and voice over so that this makes sense?
Yeah, I think that's normal, though, isn't it? Like, you have the German dub, French dub, whatever.
So the original OG American track.
Yes.
The English track. God, I'm such an American. I'm so sorry.
I wrote a sin about that the other day. I wish somebody would speak American.
Oh my God. Anyway, so there's the OG English track.
Yeah.
That isn't released.
Yes, to my knowledge.
Not only did this French company acquire this product, they only released it in their own language.
Correct, yes.
I guess it's time to learn French.
I guess. I just don't know how to move to France. That company must have just thought, wow, we got the exclusive earliest premiere rights for this. Like, no, you did not.
What do you mean they did not?
Well, I mean, they did, but they shouldn't have done. Somebody should have been scratching their head going, what? This doesn't make sense.
Why doesn't it make sense? Good for you, French.
Yeah, France.
Let me ask this before we move on.
Mm-hmm.
How many Star Trek fans are moving to France now?
All of them. I think that's the latest news, is that all of them. They all collectively just went,
just mass exodus just, of their own country.
Went. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just all
there's going to be like, you know how when people were immigrating and they kind of land and they have like little sections of the towns so they would all stick together.
Yeah.
It's like that, but for Trekkies. So we're all going to go to France. Yeah. Yeah. And then we have like this little collective space where it's just a whole bunch of Trekkie nerds.
I would love that. I don't know why that isn't a thing. And I don't know why we don't do that more often.
And then whoever is already in France listening to this podcast is the one who like pauses it to translate so that we all know what's actually going on in the show. I bet you would be able to guess which word I actually knew from what you just said.
Croissant.
That's right. If you're used to camping, you know you're going to need certain supplies because you know certain things are going to happen, like toilet paper, a spade to dig out your little poo hole, and these kinds of things. Mm-hmm, these are what you know if you're a camper.
That's
so
such
I guess
a waste. You should use that poo as fuel. You don't need to bury it. You keep it and you cook it. It's with it. You cook with it.
What the fuck are you talking about?
It's a fuel. Like, you can burn it, right? I'm pretty sure you can burn poo.
I've never heard this in my life, but I'm not a camper. So let's go down this little rabbit trail that you have suddenly opened up before us.
Someone back me up.
Like a bunghole in space.
Yeah.
Okay, so you theorize / know that
great fuel. Yeah.
You can take freshly... By the way, this is an R-rated show.
Yeah. Shit.
You can take fresh shit and plop it in the barbecue pit.
Yeah.
And light it aflame to help cook with.
No, I think you got to dry it out first. I think what Bear Grylls does is that he like squeezes the juice out of it, drinks the juice because it's really nutritious.
Who is doing this?
Bear Grylls. He's like a survival guy.
Okay. Okay.
And then you dry out the poop and then you sprinkle it on the fire with the kindling and it works as a fuel.
But you have to dry it first.
Mm. Yeah, you got to dry it out. Yeah.
Is that like when you make your own like dried fruit roll up? So you like press it down and then put it out, you know, in the sun?
Yeah,
for days?
Think that's exactly the same. Yeah.
Amazing. Wow. Hey, if I can work at Chateau Picard, I'd be very, very
you
happy. I was watching an episode of Bluey with this is my life now because Iris is obsessed with Bluey.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm enjoying them as well. And in one of the episodes, she's camping in the bush, and a fellow group of campers is there, and they're from France. And so it's like the kids sort of meet somewhere and they play together, but they don't speak the same language. Mm-hmm. And then they go back to their campsite. And then the boy from France ends up like not showing up the next day because they had to leave, and Bluey's bummed. But his name was Jean-Luc.
Oh.
And so I'm in the car listening to the episode because I tell her that it's a podcast, so we can only listen. It's great.
Yeah. And okay, that works. Yeah. Lying.
I'm like, Jean-Luc, my God. And I'm like, she has no idea why I'm so excited. And I try to explain it to her and she's
not gonna get bless
she
her.
Care.
No.
But
no,
I
no,
was
no.
really excited about it. Anyway, if I could get a job working, I'd be so enthusiastic about it. And then like you hope that you would just catch a glimpse of the card.
But then I think they would have like a lot of filters for that to make sure that fan people don't get into it. And they're not just like, look, do you know who he is? Like, don't be here because you want to meet Captain Picard. Be here because you're good at your job.
Right.
Don't be bugging Jean-Luc.
Yeah. 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 People that work at Disney, don't think you're going to meet Mickey Mouse. Okay. I actually lived in a house for a while that had a fireplace, but it was propane. There was a massive propane tank in the backyard. And so that's how we would, because it was like the only way to get the heat nice during the winter time, because our heater was shit. And so the house would just smell like propane. And I hated it so much. We lived there for years. And I was constantly like, will I die of propane inhalation?
And yet, the smell of gas or petrol smells amazing. I love going to petrol stations, smelling the petrol.
Are you being serious right now?
Yeah, it smells great.
Okay, so then I have a confession, because I don't want you to be alone in your weirdness.
Okay.
No, you're lying. I'm not going to confess
anything.
No,
I'm not lying. I genuinely...
No, you're lying.
You should not sniff the fumes, but I really like it. Yeah, I really, really like it. You can call me a lunatic. It's fine.
I like the smell of barns.
Barns? Manure? But that's actual poo.
It's not just poo.
Okay, poo and it's urine.
Animal sweat and hay. And...
You're weird. Full judgment. Those overalls have broken you.
Such an asshole. Oh. Prove you're not a changeling. Name three Sung type androids who aren't Data.
Fred.
Fred, and Fred. Okay, Fred, and then his lore.
Yeah, nice.
A Sung one.
Yeah. Sung type.
A Sung type?
Yeah.
Well, inspired the twins by weren't Sung. Really a Sung type because Data made them, right?
I think that counts. Yeah, I think that counts. He's doing it based on... They were doing it based on his speck of shit that
DNA,
they found. Yeah.
Or his whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess those count, but I don't think that those count. Mm-hmm. No, because Sung totally made him. Like, well, the Sung guy.
Alton Sung?
Yeah, I don't remember his name. Because yeah, he did. He made her because he kept making her and she kept dying and then he would remake her. Oh, yes. It's so fucking creepy.
It's so fucked up. There's also Lal. That was made by Data. There's B4, who was actually made, I think, before Lore, which is the real one. And there's another one that is, I can't remember her name, but it's basically Dr. Sung made a sex bot for himself, and she calls herself Data's mum. But yeah, I can't remember her name. But yeah, she's a very human-looking android.
Are you saying that they're married?
I think she...
Wait, hold on. Mm-hmm. Did he make her to be a sex bot, or did he make her to be a partner and then they fell in love and they got married and stuff?
No, she died, and so he remade her body, I think, as an android.
Didn't you just tell me, like, Geordi also made a sex bot?
No, he made a hologram that he fell in love with.
It wasn't
but Geordi
a robot.
Falls
okay,
in love
okay.
with everybody. Because, yeah, she wanted to leave the planet, and he didn't, and then she left him. And then I think... They wipe her memory and just let her go on living. Yeah. They don't know.
She figured it out.
Yeah. They don't. They only find out when she falls down a hole and her arm falls off. And they're just like, something's not right here.
Yeah. Look at those wires.
Look at her arm that looks like Data's arm that fell off.
There is a chance that we're going to be getting the class pet for part of summer break.
It's a leopard.
I don't know. I don't know how to handle that very well.
Just don't kill it. That's how you handle it.
Question for everyone. Who is your guy's favorite captain from Discovery Only?
It's going to be tricky for Danae because I don't think you've seen many. Mine is Giorgio, without a doubt. That's
Wait,
Michelle Yeoh
from
character.
Discovery? Is Pike on a Discovery captain?
Oh, yeah. He was in season two. He was introduced in season two as captain of the Enterprise and ends up taking over Discovery for a lot of it. Pike's a cheat answer.
Is our same Pike?
That's our Pike, yeah. They did.
Same person?
Same actor, yeah. Anson Mount, yeah.
Oh, fun!
Yeah, and then they immediately gave him a spin off. So him, Spock, number one, they're in season two of Discovery.
Whoa!
Yeah, and then you get the spin off.
Well, that's pretty cool.
Let's do it. Captain Spock, Stardate 14.
You do this every week,
this
Ian.
New format has really messed me up. It's not as easy to read as it once was.
Every week.
Captain Spot, Stardate 1440. Yeah, I didn't like that. This is the part of the show where we nope.
This is the part of the show where we
where
nope.
We nope. Welcome to Captain's...
Wow. Are you okay?
No, I'm really hungry. Welcome to the Captain's Ready Room where we hear your predictions. Nope.
Wow.
I'm literally reading it in front of me and just saying different words.
Do you want me to I wonder if I should add something to our show where I can hit a button and it goes beep, like a little retake.
It'd be amazing.
Like beep, beep, beep. And then you're just
you've just described the outtakes for the show.
Yeah.